Hello, I'm Ugly Phil. 2018's been quite a year, and we've had some excellent gigs this year too, from the likes of Roger Waters, Prophets of Rage, The Killers, Queens of the Stone Age, Bon Jovi, Def Leppard, to name but a few. And with these great gigs came some great guests to Triple M. Let's relive a few, starting with Steve Adler, who was here touring the Appetite for Destruction album with his band.
Thank you, handsome Phil. It's an honor to be here.
You know what? You could do a cartoon dog, man. Seriously.
It's the salt you put in my teeth.
Seriously.
You rock and rollers are crazy.
That's a dog's voice in a cartoon called Salty the Dog.
Salty the Dog. Arr.
There he is. There's a lot of fate moments with you and with Guns N' Roses and with you and Slash as well, because you were telling me you walked down the street, you saw a flyer with Axl on it, and you went, this is going to be the guy, right?
Yeah, well, we were walking down Sunset Boulevard during the 80s. They would pass out a lot of flyers, all the bands. And there was this one flyer that was so cheaply made, and it stood out. These guys look really cool. Let's go check them out. And we went to see him at Gazzari's. And I told Sasha, I said, if we get that singer and that guitar player and a kick-ass bass player, we're going to have the best band ever. I ended up meeting Axl and Izzy the next day.
Well, you know what? When Appetite came out, it was just amazing. It blew everybody away because it was with all of the hair and the glam of Sunset Strip hair metal thing. It had a real sort of punk rock feel.
It had disco. It had a country, a queenish opera kind of thing. Every one of our influences were different. Appetite for Destruction is what happened. We were thinking, yes, we want to make money. We want a tour bus and we want to start touring the world and we want to start using the back of the tour bus as a sex machine. The funny part about Appetite for Destruction is Axl never came to rehearsals. So
really?
We couldn't afford a PA or a place that had one. I didn't even know what the lyrics were until the record came out.
Wow.
You know, we would do live shows and you could hear a little here and a little there. But when the record came out, I was like, holy crap. Axl's amazing. This is great.
What about Sweet Child of Mine with the amazing guitar intro?
The guitar thing was funny. You know, the dee, 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 dee.
Yeah.
We were just messing around in the studio and Slash was doing like the circus kind of, you know, do, 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 do. I said, dude, that sounds so cool. Try that in a different way. Immediately went, do, 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 do. I was like, dude, that's brilliant. I said, we got to use it. And we did, and it worked.
Thanks so much for coming into Triple M, mate.
Thank you.
I also really enjoyed talking to Matt Bellamy from Muse about artificial intelligence earlier on this year.
I think over the next decade, we're going to have lots of difficult questions to answer about the way we want technology to behave. You know, I think right now there's all that stuff on the news, isn't there, about Facebook and all that stuff, the atomization of micro-targeting, advertising and stuff like that. And they're the kind of uses for AI that we probably didn't think about. You know, in our minds, we think of AI as being some kind of scary robot or something that tries to influences, but we don't think of it as being a kind of relatively invisible thing that kind of subtly influences all of us to swing an election and so on. That's going to be one of the first of many things I think we're going to discover and realize is already happening, you know?
Hey, what about with Stephen Hawken? Will you be doing any kind of music tribute for an album when it finally arrives?
Oh, I haven't thought of that, actually, but that's quite a nice thought. Maybe we could do like a big heavy drum beat and edit his voice up to sort of...
Yeah, I was going
to
say, a sample would be quite interesting, wouldn't it? You know? I loved seeing you when you were out here recently, and you know what really surprised me is the incredible sounds that you get out of your guitar.
Yeah, I'm all about the sound effect. One of the best things you can do with electric guitar is just chuck it around and it makes a cool noise. Do you know what I mean? Like it makes a ruckus, or you like tune the string down and bend it all over the place. You can choose to be like a sort of great technical player and play all the scales and all the arpeggios and all that stuff, but so in a live environment, some of the most impressive stuff that really just cuts through is when you just make crazy sound effects.
Well, that's what I thought. I wondered whether or not you'd modified the guitar, because I've never heard anybody do what you do with it, a guitar, and it really surprised me. And I remember sitting there thinking, what's he doing here? Has he got some extra batteries in that thing or what?
When it's a three-piece and you're the only guitarist, you can be a lot louder. If you've got like two guitarists in your band or three guitarists in your band, then you all have to sort of turn down a bit to make space for each other. You know, I don't have to turn down for anyone, basically.
Yeah. Peter Garrett joined us for Oztober, which meant it was our month-long celebration of Aussie music. With a 40-year career that you've had, it's amazing that, and I mean amazing, really, that you've remained relevant. Also,
I hope so.
Not daggy or uncool, which is a really fine line, because when you've got a career that spans that period of time, eventually you're going to go out of fashion. And yet Midnight Oil have never had that problem.
Well, that's very nice of you to say that, man. Well, look, it's not intentional. I think it's just probably part of the alchemy of the band, something which we didn't have a lot of control over.
Yeah.
I mean, think of the sliding door moments. If I hadn't answered the ad, you know, if Rob and Martin hadn't been at school together, you know, if Jim didn't live up the road.
Yeah.
I mean, what was it that brought us together? Who can say? And yet, that having happened, I think we've tried to be faithful to ourselves as musicians and really, really, you know, sometimes sometimes boringly intense about what we do. But by being boringly intense about what we do, we've ignored everything that's going on around us. And if you ignore what's going on around you, I think you actually end up making better music. And maybe it's music that does stand the test of time.
I'm to stay live at the Domain in Sydney. This is available as a Blu-ray DVD, the CDs as well. You'd come to the end of a massive tour. But there's something really important as well about the Domain.
Well, I mean, I think the Domain has always been this place where Aboriginal people used to use it as a gathering point. It was a place where people could go and do the soapbox deal. It was where you could express yourself, talk about politics, talk about life, talk about issues. The famous sessions on the weekends at the Domain when someone would just get up and harangue the crowd about whatever. And it's that idea of democracy, that freedom of expression, to say something and not be locked up. Lucky country, we take for granted. And it had part of its genesis was the Domain. And for us, this is our hometown.
It was a no-brainer, really, wasn't
it? Yeah, yeah. We needed to be there. And we love playing outside when we can. So, yeah, it was the natural joint to be.
We had Colin Hay in here recently, and we were talking about Australia and how lucky we are, and sometimes don't realise that we're 23 million people. And we've got this continent all to ourselves.
I often think that instead of people going off and doing an apprenticeship or starting to work or going off to college or uni, it should be compulsory for people when they leave school, whatever age, to have a year. They got to save up a bit, perhaps, but just to do some travel. It opens your eyes incredibly. I totally agree with Colin. And I'm super fearful that we take the place for granted. The incredible thing for us is that we don't have, apart from the history of the land being taken by the British when they arrived off Aboriginal people, which we still need to square away properly, and which I think we can do, but we don't have a history of conflict, of religious battles, of border wars, and so on and so forth, apart from the original border war here.
Yeah.
And we're in a remarkable opportunity to be a country in the 21st century that really does good stuff, not only for its own people, but in the region as a whole. And I think, you know, sometimes I see people who just treat the place badly and I say, mate, you've got no idea, you know. You've landed in heaven. It's not up in the clouds.
Yeah, yeah.
It's right here. I think that's a big part of what Midnight Oil is saying or to and singing about. I think it's because when we first went away, the scales dropped off our eyes as well. And we got back and we just, mate, I just kissed the turf at Mascot.
Well, the DVD and CD's out now. It's called Armistice Day. It's awesome. Peter Garrett, thank you so much for dropping into Triple M, mate.
Thank you very much, Phil.
It would be remiss of me to go through my favourite interviews of the year and not mention Robert Plant of Led Zeppelin fame, who I was really excited about catching up with. And he was highly amused by the size of our TV microphones that we gave him.
Just getting used to the lollipop world. I thought we'd gone past that now.
Yeah, I know. Everything old is new again, isn't it?
Speak for yourself.
In fact, even in recording techniques, what was the approach that you did with this particular album?
I was really excited with the whole deal of being inspired by the Cocteau Twins and by Jesus and Mary Chain and all the sounds that were coming out then, which were very foreign to the 60s and the 70s, because the whole minimalist playing.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of musicians that came along that booted the heavy rockers out of the way for a long time. The story of my life glued together with the kind of beauty of what the guys play that are surrounding me. It's an extension of GarageBand. I was a singer and co-writer in a lot of Led Zeppelin stuff, and I come from a land of the ice and snow, and I don't want to about trying to recreate the past.
No, well, you don't hit me as somebody who's big on nostalgia.
That's not the reason to keep it going. Otherwise, you might as well pump gas.
Yeah, of course.
There's a bit more creativity to that.
I went back and found a Rolling Stone interview that you did when you just turned 40, going back to, I think, 1988, and you were talking about trying to cast off that shadow. Was that something that was on your mind for a long time, that you really had to separate the previous work that you'd done to what you wanted to do in order to be able to move forward?
No, I was moving forward at a great rate of knots and pissing a lot of people off. In the old days, radio stations in the States used to quantify and figure out how the audience was taking songs that they played. You run your songs, you see if you get any phones saying, what's that song played
Research,
again? Yeah. With my stuff, people were saying, take that shit off.
Really?
Yeah. And wow. So I knew I was on my way to a new world. It was magnificent. I knew I'd finally pissed that many people off that I was off on my own.
I saw something really interesting the other day, a great documentary on singers, and Roger Daltrey said that no singer actually likes the sound of their own voice.
I don't blame him saying that. I just want the voice to voice what I'm trying to sing about. So if my voice is true to what my intention is and what the emotion that is carried or the humour or the irony is carried in the song, then I'm okay about it.
You've got the anniversary coming up for Led Zeppelin's World War 50th.
I've heard a lot about that.
Yep.
Remember, there was no real rock then. A lot of stuff was kind of blues-based rock. That's where me and Bonham came from the Band of Joy, you know. But that was 50 years and more ago, apparently.
Well, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much.
And you're not ugly.
Oh, there you go.
How weird is that?
And we finished the year with an epic Bon Jovi tour, including an exclusive sound check for the Triple M winners. And I had a chat with John Bon Jovi before he got back to Australia. I wanted to know about how he felt about his earlier work.
You loved everyone in the moment. They were your favorite record in and of those moments. And so how could I not be proud of Slippery When Wet and New Jersey? I wouldn't want to rewrite them, if that makes any sense. You know, I mean, I was 25 when we wrote Bad Name, and amen. But to be 56 and writing Bad Name wouldn't work for me.
Well, you mentioned the New Jersey album, and I'm led to believe you had 30-plus songs originally for that album?
There were 30 songs. The initial conversations were, why don't we do a double record? And we just started cutting. Now, Bad Name may have been one of the latter songs, but I don't remember. I claim early dementia. But, you know, because... And why I say that truthfully, Phil, is there were 5 top 10 singles off that record, so there were other hits too.
I'm led to believe that you actually decided not to put the group's photo on the album cover because it was detracting from what you wanted to do. I don't know how true this story is, that perhaps people were judging you at this particular time on the group's looks, and you wanted to try and detract from that or take away from that.
Yeah, that's for sure. If you look at the inner sleeve, the record company had to fight me for this. I have my back to the camera, and I'm looking over my shoulder. Initially, I had my back to the camera completely, so I just looked like Cousin It. You couldn't see me other than a big head of hair. Yeah. And a long, you know, duster down to the ground. The label was like, we're not accepting that.
Yeah, of course.
And so the compromise was looking over my shoulder. But yeah, we were definitely very aware of, I don't want to be the cute boy. I want you to listen to the song.
Was there a stage where you thought, hang on a second, you know, there's more to us than hair?
Oh, I probably was saying that in 2018. You know, I think we always have to fight that fight. But what comes with time and a catalog of music is then people talk about it less.
Yeah.
Let's just say that. Now they talk about it because they can't believe I still have it.
Yeah, good. Well done with that. I noticed that Rolling Stone magazine recently had a reader's poll for the best Bon Jovi songs. And I want to give you the top five because I don't know if you saw this, but the top five are really interesting. Okay, at number 5, and again, these are your fans that voted in Rolling Stone's poll, so it has credibility. And they said at number 5, It's My Life. And then at number 4, Dry County. Number 3, Runaway. Number 2, Wanted Dead or Alive. And then number 1, Living on a Prayer. So I wouldn't have expected it to go in that particular order.
Dry County, and yet there's no Always or Better Roses or I'll Be There for You, and those were all monster hits.
Yeah.
And that's a surprise. Yeah.
It's good, though, isn't it?
Cool. Dry County, I worked very hard on that song.
Well, that means that your fans have actually gone outside of the hit catalog, as you say, and gone and looked deeper at songs. And I mean, that must obviously mean something to you because these are songs that you've put on the album that they've really researched and really they've taken to them.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And it goes to show you that people want to listen to the album, an experience. It's not just about the pop single that goes to number one. You know, Dry County was a 10-minute long song about one of my motorcycle trips across America. You know, so I really do appreciate that people take the time to listen to lyrics, and it defends my position that album tracks are hugely important to the art form continuing.
Because I'm a big fan of albums. I like to hold them. I like to have vinyl as well. I like to look at the sleeve. You know, when I was a kid, you know, I'd buy a record. You'd put it at the end of your bed and you'd wake up in the middle of the night and you'd look at the album, you know. So, you know, how do you circumvent that now as a band that, you know, you want to get more than just one single? It's a completely different world, isn't it?
I'm still making an album. I'm not interested in just cutting a couple of tracks and saying, that's it, let's go back on the road. So I'm definitely old school and fight with the streaming services to please understand that you and I laid on our bed and listened to the lyrics and read the credits. And I said to Jimmy Iovine, who went on to create Beats Headphones, so Jimmy, you know why I knew your name 30 years ago? Because I knew what records you engineered. You know, because that was what we had to use our imaginations to decide what the band spoke like. That was important to us growing up.
We have another anniversary as well, the Keep the Faith album. Imagine you'd have great memories of this particular one.
Yeah, we did, because it was the beginning of the second phase of Bon Jovi. You know, the first one is the first 4 records, and then figure it out by going and doing Young Guns and cutting my hair off and turning 30 and gone on to change the direction of who we were and what we wanted to be. And the grunge movement got very popular, and my peers were all falling like leaves off of a dead tree. But we not only survived, but thrived with Keep the Faith and Bed of Roses and Dry County and songs off of that record that kept us in the know. And it began a second phase for us, which was great.
Was there a period, though, there where you felt, you know, where do I fit into all of this?
I think I've had that happen to me a number of times throughout my career. Before Keep the Faith, in that period between New Jersey and Keep the Faith was one. Before Crush with It's My Life, that was another. Certainly before This House Is Not For Sale was yet another. So, you know, I've had these crossroads, and it's okay, because what I've come to really realize is that by taking the other fork in the road doesn't mean that it's going to be bad. It may lead to a great new adventure. You know, and it helps you grow as an individual. So each one of those times, you know, I was afraid and I thought, oh, Lord, what's going to happen now? But always something better came out of it.
Let's talk about a couple more things while we've got time. One being, of course, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you had up to 1 million people demanding that you be inducted into the Hall of Fame. How did you find out about the inclusion?
We got a call ultimately from one of the guys who was on the board, and he leaked it to me. And I forgot if it was over a weekend, but he said, you can't tell anyone. You can't even tell the band. He says, because I'll be chastised for having let you know before anyone's supposed to know. So I knew for a couple of days, and it wasn't quite as emotional as I thought it would be. I think because of, you know, waiting for it for so long. But I will tell you unequivocally that when we got there and when we did it, giving the speech and all that, it was fabulous. And in the strangest way, I'm happy that it took the extra time to get in, just for the appreciation of it all.
And was it nice to see some of the old faces?
Yeah, it was like being at your funeral, but, you know, you weren't in the box.
Yeah.
I mean, it was everyone that you'd ever, you know, had in your career there to celebrate you. And, you know, you were able to enjoy it. It was a really great weekend.
And what about the rehearsals? How did that come together? Was it an immediate thing? Did you immediately have that chemistry straight away again?
Yeah. I mean, we had to work Richie into it. You know, he had come to a rehearsal, you know, so he didn't completely walk in out of his element. And Alec hardly played bass at all any longer. So it was a task for him. Richie ultimately delivered, and it was great to see him.
Next year, we've got more huge names, and we'll start off the year with Slash. See you next year.